Hey everyone, and welcome to Web3 for Gen Z, where I interview Web3 leaders to make crypto more transparent for Gen Zers like you and I. I'm your host Aryan, and my guest for this week is Bessie Liu. Bessie is a crypto reporter at Blockworks, a news website for digital assets that is often called the Bloomberg for crypto. Before working at Blockworks, Bessie was a tech journalist for The Org and finished her master's degree in journalism at NYU. In this episode, we talk about what it's like working as a tech journalist in Web3. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy our conversation. Great, we're live. Hey, Bessie, welcome to the show.
Hello.
There's a lot to cover in this intersection of Web3 and journalism that I want to talk about throughout this call. But the first thing I want to talk about, just to give people some context on what you're doing at Blockworks, is some of the areas that you're writing about. Could you just give a quick enumeration or list of some of the topics that you cover within the Web3 industry at Blockworks?
Yeah, sure. I mainly cover DeFi, things that are happening within DAOs, and I also cover just general market trends and things from time to time as well. But I guess my main area of focus is DeFi.
And how do you source information for these articles?
Sometimes we get press releases from PR people. And then other times we see things on Twitter that catch our interests. And so we would probably reach out to people on Twitter and DM them. Other times it's just hearsay as well. Once you start meeting people in the industry, you start hearing about trends that or things that like they might be interested in, and kind of just dig more into it.
Have like a lot of your articles come from inbound information where you hear news from someone else, or is it more so you're on Twitter or another platform and you see something that's...
I'd say like 50-50. We do a lot of outreach. I send a lot of emails out every day, but I also receive a lot of e-pitches as well. And then I guess I spend like my mornings just filtering through a lot of the pictures that I receive and seeing what I can write about. And if they're
When you're writing on an article, how do you structure the, I guess, the few chunks that I imagine for writing an article would be sourcing information, outreach, and then writing and editing, and research probably would be another component. What's the rough structure? And is it different for Web3 specifically?
Well, I don't think it's any different in Web3 than it is in traditional journalism, to be honest. I think a lot of what I do is just learning about the topic that I'm writing about and then going ahead, writing it up and reaching out to sources whilst I'm doing all of that. And then once I hear back from the sources, I kind of like add their quotes into the story. And then I send it off to our editor and they edit it, and then we send it off to our copy editor, and then our copy editor goes through it, and then goes live on our website.
Makes sense. And the first part, I would say, is probably the most unique then, right? Learning about a specific topic. I mean, not necessarily, but Web3 might involve some depth of technical research that you have to do.
I think the technical knowledge comes over time. I feel like I'd probably have to do less research now than I did when I first started writing about Web3, because at the time I didn't really know much, whereas now I feel like I know a lot more. I guess that would be similar to any beat that you're writing in journalism, though. So regardless of which topic, once you kind of get the hang of it, it becomes much easier.
In the beginning, how much time were you spending learning about Web3?
I mean, every single day.
Right.
But I think the way that helped me learn the quickest or fastest was just talking to people and having them kind of explain things to me. I found that to be like the easiest way to kind of pick up things and also understand things as well.
So that's interesting, because everyone I've talked to has said that the way they sort of picked up the industry was reading. Where did you find people initially to talk about Web3? Was it at Blockworks, or was it just friends that you knew outside of the company?
Yeah, I mean, from the beginning, well, at the very beginning, it was people who were at Blockworks, and then also friends of friends who kind of worked in the industry, posted on Instagram and was like, hey, anyone who is in this industry, I'd love to chat to you, learn more about what you do, just to have a conversation. And so I was talking to a bunch of my friends' friends who were in Web3, were building products, all in a bunch of different roles. And then over time, as I became more familiar, I started meeting more people in the industry and just setting up time to like chat with them, and all of that stuff was really helpful. I guess our co-founder, Mike, also really helped setting me up with like his contacts and getting me to chat with people in the industry. And so, yeah, I mean, I kind of just grew my network that way. And that's been like my way of learning. I guess everyone is different.
Well, that makes sense. What questions do you ask, or were you asking people initially when you were chatting with them to learn about the industry or what they're doing in general? Was it as simple as, could you explain what you do and how it works? Or was there like more depth to the conversations?
It was literally, what do you do? Tell me about yourself. How did you get involved? Tell me about what you're working on, all the projects that you're excited about, and also asking them like, what trends are you seeing? What things are you excited about? Just to kind of gauge like what's happening and what has happened.
And from a large set of having these conversations, did you have any initial perceptions or broader insights about the whole industry? Any like big insights that you were noticing when you were first talking to people and asking questions like, what got you into the industry, or like, what trends are you seeing?
Quite honestly, I think it was a lot of people who were just really fascinated by the technology and really saw the potential in blockchain technology and how it would kind of change like finance, for example, or a lot of like things going forward in the future. And so it was really nice to talk to people who were like super passionate about what they were doing. I also joined Blockworks at a really strange time. It was like when everything was kind of crashing down.
Crashing down, yeah.
Yeah, so kind of talking to them about all of that was quite interesting. It really kept me fascinated as well.
I totally forgot the context of the market. So you were learning about the industry simultaneously as it was crashing down. When I like remember talking to people about this industry 5 months ago, I just had all sorts of friends saying it doesn't make sense to work in this industry, or like buy crypto or use crypto or like anything around crypto. So why even think about working in an industry that is doing worse than it was doing the day before, for example? Like, did you have those conversations with friends and family as well as you were talking to insiders who were like pretty confident about the industry?
Yeah, so a lot of people outside of the industry were like, oh, what a strange time to get into crypto considering everything's coming crashing down. But I think what I guess was a bit different for me was I was a reporter. So if things come crashing down, there's always
more news
to write about. Yeah. So there was more news to write about, if anything. And so there was a lot of breaking news at the time, which kind of helped with me learning about the industry and like also learning about why things didn't work. And so I would say it was honestly a good time to kind of like get into the space.
Well, if you had to take a stab at trying to explain, this is such no one answer can do justice to this question, but like, what would be your best stab at trying to explain what was happening 5 months ago?
Oh man, it's a web of things that I'm not sure I'm the most qualified to answer. But if I put it simply, I think it was just people experimenting in a really brand new industry. And I think at the same time as you were experimenting, there are bound to be projects that are going to fail. And that was kind of the start of it.
And then it cascaded across just valuations declining and people panicking and so on and so on.
Yeah, exactly. I think everything was interconnected in a way when things were coming crashing down. But it was also good to see that there were like companies that held through and that were just building at the time and not as affected by what was happening as well.
Yeah, I mean, I want to touch upon this last topic because you said like one of your specialty domains is DeFi, which is probably the best example of companies that held through while this market was collapsing. Like, did you find yourself writing about this parallel between CeFi and DeFi and how they were performing in the past few months?
Less so now, but at the beginning, yes. Well, when I first started, I didn't really know anything about DeFi. That was kind of a beat that I slowly fell into later once I was more familiar with the space. But yeah, definitely the intersection between like CeFi and DeFi is quite interesting, especially now. I think like with stable coins are still relatively centralized, I would say. It's interesting how it's going to be playing in like the DeFi network as I guess things continue to move forward.
This is one of the biggest topics that people polarize themselves around in Web3, right? Like how much the level to which decentralized protocols or supposedly companies that have that claim to be decentralized have centralized involvement in them is probably one of the biggest sources of contention in the industry that people fight about.
Yeah, back definitely. And forth on Twitter. Yeah, from like the conversations I've had, it definitely seems like an area of contention.
We don't have to get into specifics, but did you ever form opinions on some of these topics yourself as you were interviewing people? I'm sure you had like a healthy balance. You met a healthy balance of skeptics and supporters of the industry, but did you find yourself being polarized around topics as you were interviewing people?
I mean, I have my own opinions about like things that are happening and things that are unfolding. But at the same time, I do feel like the industry is still evolving and there's just so much that we still don't know, that like what works and what doesn't. And even regulation-wise, like they're just trying to keep up. And I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about what cryptocurrencies are and all of that stuff as well. Especially when I do talk to people who don't work in the industry now that I am very much part of it. So, I mean, yes, I have my own opinions, but I'm also, I mean, relatively cautious because, yeah, I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Cautious because you wouldn't, because your job conflict, or I guess like constrains you to not share your opinions, or cautious because the industry is still unfolding, so your opinions could change anytime.
Yeah, I think the industry is still unfolding, and so my opinions could change at any time. I could be proven wrong at any time. Certain people might do certain things, and I might be like, oh, that's strange, but then they might be right in a few months' time. And I think as a journalist, it's also about like maintaining that balance between like not letting your opinions influence what you write. So a huge part for me is to just maintain a healthy level of skepticism for everything that I hear. But also, like, it's very exciting to learn about what everyone is building and what everyone's working on. And I think, like, a lot of people that I've met in the industry through my work have just been some of, like, the brightest people. I'm sorry if you hear my cat purring on the side.
I actually did not.
Okay. But, yeah.
I have two questions, two follow-ups to the comment. I'll get you one of them later, but the immediate one is like, in practice, how do you actually prevent yourself from being biased when covering a topic or developing opinions? Is there like a hack or something, like something that you've learned over the years?
I really can't really think of like a hack per se, but I guess like not many of my friends outside of my job like know or work in crypto or have anything to do with it. And so I feel like I get a good degree of separation between my life and my job. And so like my job is exciting to me and it's interesting to me, but I guess I don't, it's not my life. And so I'm not like lost in it, if that makes sense.
It makes sense. So like people who are lost in their jobs and their like friend circle outside the job was in the same industry would probably find themselves being biased, right? Because they've opted into getting like talking about the industry and having information inbounds all the time about the industry.
I mean, I don't know if bias is the right word. I think they're just probably more involved in like, or emotionally invested in like the success of the projects or the things that they're working on. So it kind of makes sense for them to be a bit more invested or like hoping that it works out. Whereas like for me, it's because I'm a little bit more removed, because I'm involved in the sense that like I write about it a lot, I talk to a lot of people in this industry and all of that stuff, but I guess I'm still a reporter. Like my job is to be a reporter. It's to be kind of a little bit removed in that sense. And so
right. Well, if you're not emotionally invested in the upside of a specific project, because right. That's not what a reporter has to do. Whereas if you were, let's say, like the co-founder of a company in this industry, and you're like a lot more invested in the upside of a specific industry. And so as a result of that emotional investment involvement, you would want to see the industry doing well. Yeah. So it's not necessarily a bias, but that makes sense. Like separation and the nature of the job itself keeps you from being biased.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, like I want the industry to do well so that I can still be employed.
Right.
I think not to the extent of like people who have like their own projects and are co-founders or have invested a lot of time and money into the space.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Well, I want to jump to the second question that I had, which is related to this brief comment you made on misconceptions that a lot of people from the industry or outside the industry have, sorry. And the question is, if you can remember like one or two common misconceptions that you've heard yourself explaining or clearing to people about crypto, like what would you say they are?
I think like that NFTs are just artwork. That's a common misconception outside of like...
the NFT space.
The industry, I would say. Everyone's like, oh, it's just like, you pay for artwork. And I'm like, no, not quite. There's like a lot of user cases for NFTs, and the potential for them are actually kind of amazing. Could really change the way we like operate things. And I think like that is one misconception. It's not just owning a digital artwork. It's like the utility behind the token that you own almost. That's one. Another one, I'm not sure exactly, because like I said, I really don't talk about my work outside of my work much. So,
well, specifically within like DeFi or DAOs, so NFTs I totally understand, but is there like a common misconception that crops up around DAOs or DeFi, assuming they're like, I can see people like having misconceptions about DAOs in terms of like, people often equate them to real organizations and say, well, DAOs will never replace companies because they think of the two as like parallels, and always say, well, we will always have LLCs and DAOs will not become the new LLCs. And I always think to myself, well, DAOs are not really meant to replace LLCs because the idea is so much more different. You're still going to have LLCs farming, and you're still going to have DAOs where you have like a bunch of people all over the world organizing around some central interest or some central goal that usually involves a treasury behind it. But DAOs are not meant to replace like simple works like manufacturing, I don't know, like a desk or like table or like beds. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
Like I've seen misconceptions in like subdomains as well cropping up.
I feel like a misconception is that like everything is already figured out in crypto. Like we're not so much like with the people that I talk to, but like of my sources and stuff, because I think like they're very aware of all these things, but like more so like people outside of the industry is say, for example, especially with like DAOs, I think like they're like, oh, isn't it just like a traditional organization, but more transparent? Like, how does it work? What's like the best way to like organize a DAO, yada, yada, yada. But like the answer to that is like, I think the industry is still trying to figure that out and like work that out as well. And there's no like clear guideline as to how it should be organized, like a DAO should be organized. It's really up for experimentation, and it's up for like debate as like time goes on. Like this is still a new industry at the end of the day, and there are still things that are kind of figuring itself out. And I would say like DAOs are one of those things that are still being figured out.
Yeah, and that even relates to NFTs. I think when people say, well, what are NFTs? So like going back to the NFT misconception, I think another misconception that people have with NFTs is it's asking what exactly they're good for utility-wise outside art. And I think I always come back to this same thing that you're talking about, which is that we figured out the technology and how to get like scarce tokens out there, or how to organize people behind the same goal using tokens in the case of DAOs. But we haven't really figured out use cases for them that will be sustainable and that will work best. And that's where experimentation comes in. People have tried all sorts of crazy forms of NFTs and all sorts of use cases for DAOs, but we're still pretty far away from figuring out the long-term ways of implementing or like organizing DAOs, NFTs, and use cases that will be more sustainable, like have a longer impact in the world, I think.
I think, yeah, I mean, there are definitely people who are building that right now. And that's definitely something that should be exciting, because as it gains more traction, it will hopefully, I guess, see more of like the user cases and how it can actually be beneficial.
Yeah, certainly. And I think we're probably several years away from reaching that stage. Again, mm-hmm. not to speculate, but... I also just generally avoid any conversations in this industry that center around, well, I think X years from now things are going to look different, because like every other day I meet someone who I'm talking to about something in Web3, and they're like so devoutly against or for this industry, and they try to project their current feelings onto the future by a statement like, well, you saw what happened 5 months ago, and therefore this is what's going to happen like 3 years from now, 5 years from now, if this trend just follows. And it's just so difficult, because not just like one project, but the whole industry in general is such a multivariable function, and there's so many things in play that projecting history or projecting the present onto the future is just not worth it. Not worth having a conversation over, you know?
Right. I do think for people who are like interested in getting into the industry, this is a really exciting place to be.
Why is that?
I just think there's just so much happening all the time. There's a lot of really smart people who are working on projects in this industry. Every day I'm learning something new. I feel like there's just a depth of knowledge that like you're constantly, constantly stimulated in that sense. So I don't like to make predictions or like, you know, all of that stuff, but I definitely think that you'll be able to learn a lot if you want to tap into this space.
Yeah, like avoiding predictions about the performance of the industry, you could still talk about internally a lot of smart people working here. So if you join this industry, you can make a prediction about someone's learning capacity in the future and say, well, they're going to learn a lot from some smart people, which I think is an objective statement to make, right?
Yeah, maybe.
This like last topic that you touched upon relates to the last one or two questions I had, which is just advice for people who are interested in the industry. And there's sort of two ways I want to approach this. The first one is for someone who wants to go into the industry, if you could just put yourself like in the shoes of you, but a few months ago, 5-6 months ago, when you were first learning about the industry, what were some of the most helpful resources, articles, videos, like links that you found yourself browsing through or coming across when you were learning about the industry?
This is cliche, but Twitter. Follow anything. Like a lot of people on Twitter, I can probably send them to you after.
Just yeah, I get this every time. Like, get on Twitter and follow people. But I never ask people follow-ups on like specific people or specific accounts to follow. So I'm curious, like, from like an educational perspective, are there any one or two Twitter accounts that you found really helpful?
I'm going to be honest. I think, like I said before, like my learning came mostly from speaking to people who worked in the industry. So honestly, if you're interested in the industry, kind of just do what I did, like post on Instagram or like whichever social media you prefer and just be like, hey, I'm interested in learning more about the space. Anyone who knows anyone who works in this industry, I'd love to organize some time to like organize a coffee chat or like grab a drink or something. I just want to talk to you about what you're working on and like learn more about like the stuff that you're doing. And that was honestly like one of the most helpful things. And then afterwards, I mean, news is a bit different because I guess I'm forced to read news every day because I am a journalist and I do have to write. So I did follow a lot of like the crypto news sites. Obviously, this is where I plug Blockworks and our Blockworks research. Right. But like even our competitors, which I won't name, but like they write some really interesting things and it really helped me learn as well.
I think the take on talking to people to learn about the industry is one that's underrated.
Yeah.
And very few people actually talk about it because it seems like a lot of the people have gotten into the industry on a longer, more passive sense of consuming content across several years and then having picked it up from consuming content really passively. But I haven't really talked to anyone who has been aggressive in getting into an industry, right? Just having like a directed approach of this is where I want to get to within a few weeks because I would have to be writing about this industry in like a month or so. And so just like...
Or more like on the day or in a week.
Really? Was it that short-lived?
I think like my first week I was just trying to keep up to speed with everything. And within like my first week, I wrote one or two articles. And what really helped me was just keeping up to date with breaking news.
Right. So you had to read a lot of news and you had to like schedule time with several people in the industry within the first week.
Yeah, exactly. That was how I learned.
An extreme case. Right.
I think everyone learns at their own pace. I didn't know anything about crypto prior to joining Blockworks. I think I had like the basic knowledge of what like Web3 was and what layer ones and layer twos were. And that was like the very, very base level knowledge that I had.
Well, it's good advice for someone who wants to jump into the industry, like in an extremely short period of time. Someone who has a job offer and realizes they know nothing about the industry, for example, would find this answer pretty helpful, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if you have like a job offer or something and you're stressed out, don't worry. I was really stressed out my first week as well. I think I like had never felt so annoyed.
Incompetent was the word, felt. Yeah, I remember that specific phase as well. But you catch on pretty quickly, I would say, by talking to people, I think.
Yeah, you catch on quickly, but you also still have a lot to learn. Like, I still have so much to learn. I still don't feel like I understand the industry back to front at all. I always catch myself, like, every day. I'm like, I didn't know that. Wow, that's so interesting. So I think, it's a steep learning curve at the beginning, but, like, once you pass that steep learning curve, it's kind of a gradual, continuous learning curve, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And then you have the like longer, like several year horizon scale where you just keep learning more and more every single day.
Exactly.
Well, last question that I have for you is any advice for people who are thinking about moving from Web2 to Web3? So this is relating to one of the articles you wrote a while back on the Web2 exodus and switching from Web2 to Web3, like that's been happening in tech. For someone who's thinking about making the shift, besides the like the cliche, yes, you should do it, advice, like, what are your reflections on specifically transitioning from writing about Web2 to Web3? And like, what do you wish you had known before you had jumped into the industry that you know now?
That it's not that scary. I think like the idea of jumping into Web3 and like having to learn all these terms and all that stuff was quite intimidating before, when I was still worked at a Web2 company. And like, I was really afraid that I wouldn't be able to catch up and that I wouldn't know what was going on. But now that I've been working in this industry for a few months, it's honestly like you get the hang of it, you do learn, and things do get better. And if you want to jump into the industry, like, just do it. That sounds a bit stupid. Just do it. But no, but like,
right.
Just give it.
Well, do you think it's terminologies that make the industry scary from the outset?
I mean, there's a bunch of different things. I think it's quite technical in some aspects, and that can be really off-putting for people who aren't as technical like myself. You know, I write. I was like, math was one of my worst subjects in high school.
Right.
And so it was a bit intimidating going into an industry where people were talking in like very technical terms, and also just like worrying that I wouldn't understand like the technology, the terminology, and all of that stuff. But I think over time you do get the hang of it and you do learn a lot.
And yeah, so, it totally makes sense.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I wouldn't say like you're definitely going to love it, because you don't know and everyone's different, but I definitely feel more comfortable now in the space than I did when I first started.
Right. Well, it's really good advice. Thank you so much. Any lingering thoughts, final things that you want to touch upon before we end the call?
I think I did want to mention, like, right now it is like a very male-dominated space. So what I would say is, like, I would love to kind of see more people like myself in the industry. So I'd love if, like, girls who are, like, interested in it, like, to just give it a go, because it's not as scary as you think it is. And that way you can kind of make the industry and the technology that people are trying to build more accessible for, like, the world almost.
Yeah, I think this has to be, like, obviously on the side of candidates, like people looking to jump into the industry, but I think there's also some part that companies and the industry itself has to play, which is like how you brand yourself is sometimes so like male dominated for crypto. And then the second thing is, like, I know some companies have specific policies on trying to hire more female engineers as well, which I think should be setting examples for the rest of the industry as well. So I think it's like we within the industry should also be having some kind of responsibility to make sure that we're actually looking out for candidates and trying to convince them to make sure it's not fully male dominated, you know?
I mean, it's undeniable that it is very male dominated. I think The past 3 weeks I've been to 3 different conferences, and the ratio of men to women is something that I've never really seen before. But it doesn't mean that there aren't any women in the industry. I think there are definitely more now than they probably were like 6 months ago even. I did want to write a lot about diversity at the beginning, but I also felt like I didn't. Yeah, I think it's hard to find a balance.
Like, why wouldn't you want to write about diversity then? Now?
No, I would still love to write about it. I think it's just,
there's no good answer to solving that problem. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right, that makes sense. Awesome. Yeah, that's like a really good thought to end on. Are there any ways people can get in touch with you if they have an exciting story to share? Breaking news to find out or something? Or just like general advice, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Twitter.
Right.
You can find me on Twitter. You could also, my email's on Twitter as well. So you can send me a DM or like send me an email. I'll try to get back to you. I'm not that good at checking Telegram, come to be honest.
Yeah, same. The number of Telegram groups I've been added to in this industry that just keep spamming me is like absurdly high.
Yeah, I think my Telegram messages are mostly muted. That's why I'm terrible at checking the app. But I do reply to my emails and I do my best to reply to my Twitter DMs as well because I don't get that many.
Right. Awesome. Well, thank you. It's been lovely talking to you.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Hey, Dev, and thanks for listening to Web3 for Gen Z. If you like this episode and want to get notified about the next one, make sure you subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to this show. And if you're looking for clips and highlights from past episodes, I'd recommend you check out our Twitter at Web3 for Gen Z.